Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The president, vice president, and national Democrats are hoping that North Carolina is a state in play. As a purple state, they hope to woo enough voters to allow Joe Biden to carry the state in November. That's only happened twice before in the last 50 years, when North Carolinians voted for Jimmy Carter and then for Barack Obama. But Democrats believe that issues like abortion rights and the future of democracy can help push them over the top. They also see Mecklenburg County as a possible key to that success. It is solidly blue, but also has a track record of low voter turnout. The local voters view the stakes as high enough to motivate them to go to the polls. Will North Carolina reverse course on supporting Donald Trump, who beat President Biden 4 years ago by just under 75,000 votes? These are questions, the answers to which we won't have until the November election has come and gone, but that won't stop us from digging into the factors that may come into play. Joining us to help us do that is Dr. Susan Roberts, political science professor at Davidson College, and Mary Ramsey, the Charlotte Observer's local government accountability reporter who has been following politics closely in this election year. Welcome back to you both. Good morning.
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 Good morning. Susan, I'm going to start with you. Democrats and Republicans were very different parties when Jimmy Carter won the presidency. He was also a Southerner from an adjacent state. Barack Obama's victory came here, I think, in part as a response to his historic candidacy and what that victory, people hoped that victory would mean for the nation. But it was still close. Obama carried North Carolina by fewer than 14,000 votes in 2008. None of those conditions exist this time. In fact, the exact opposite of the Obama election is in play here. Nobody wants either of these candidates to be running for office. But are Democrats, are there hopes put of pushing this purple state into a blue region? Is it reasonable or is it a pipe dream?
I think it's reasonable. I don't think that we should look at ourselves as the same, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. We are pivotal. But one person said, which I thought is interesting, North Carolina would be, quote unquote, nice to win for Biden and a must win for Trump. And I think if you look at 2020, Trump won by over just by 1.34. And that's impressive. There are three things you have to do that you, and I don't know about one of them, to win an election. You have to register, you have to persuade, and you have to mobilize. I don't know how the registration is going for either party.
Mary, you recently wrote that President Biden's reelection campaign is betting that it can break the Democratic losing streak in the state, and they have pinpointed Mecklenburg County as the critical piece in this strategy. In fact, Mecklenburg County Democratic Chairman Drew Cromer says Mecklenburg, quote, is the county where this election will be won. I'm assuming he's talking about in North Carolina and not nationally, but in light of what we just talked about, why?
Yeah, so the basic idea is pretty simple. We've got a big population center here in Mecklenburg, and we've got a county that leans very blue. And speaking with Drew Cromer, who you just mentioned, chair of the county Democratic Party, he likened us to Fulton County, Georgia, the home of Atlanta, and Maricopa County, Arizona, the home of Phoenix, which were obviously both really pivotal for the Biden campaign's victory in 2020. So the idea is basically pretty simple math. If we can simply get more Democratic voters in Mecklenburg to vote, then that can swing these very narrow margins that we've seen in recent statewide races.
When you watch TV shows and listen to radio people talking about politics and the national election, Susan, you always hear about the important states being, for Democrats at least, being Pennsylvania, Michigan, I think Wisconsin is one of them in that, and I guess to a certain degree now Arizona, but who knows. Mm-hmm. Where does North Carolina really fall into that, because it's all about the Electoral College. Where do we fall into that grouping of states?
Well, with 16 Electoral College votes, I think were very important, but they look at Michigan, the Democrats, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania as the perennial quote-unquote blue wall. And I think that North Carolina is in the top seven. It may not be in the top five, but I think it's been reported to be on the, you know, newscast and print media as in the top seven. But I think one thing that's important is they've spent a lot of money, the Biden-Harris campaign in North Carolina. So that makes me, that would lead me to believe that it's very important in the eyes of the Democrats, very important in Joe Biden. And I think maybe it was Mary that reported the lack of the Trump campaign is just really mum about how they're have a strategy for North Carolina. And the Democrats have been very open about what they want to do.
A lot of people lived here. Fewer people lived in North Carolina in 2008 when Barack Obama carried the state. But nonetheless, a lot of people live here. He won that election. He carried that election in this state by 14,000 votes, as I said, in his first election. Then the Democrats held their national convention 4 years later in Charlotte. When Obama did not carry the state, he lost to Mitt Romney by 92,000 votes. 2% of the vote went to Republican Mitt Romney. Can we read anything into that? Susan.
I think we can read into it that we're looking at the margins. Elections are won at the margins. And I think that in terms of Mecklenburg County, Drew Cromer was a Davidson grad, my advisee, and he's always had his finger on the pulse of what happens locally can translate statewide, can translate nationally. And with that approach that he's taking here and getting that publicity, I think he's right. But I think that you're right to point out this is not your daddy's, mommy's Democratic Party. The union vote, some of the real blue collar vote, Trump is making inroads with some women and some of the college educated. So that profile is changing a little bit. I think go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that if Obama won the state by 14,000 votes in 2008 and then 4 years later lost by 92,000 votes, what did he do wrong? What happened here? What does it say about our political sensibilities that a flip of that magnitude would happen?
Well, I think his campaign, his first campaign was really aggressive in terms of looking to involve local activists, and there was the excitement about the first Black president. I don't think there's the excitement now about Obama was not the first. There's not much excitement about the rematch. One person interviewed, I think, in North Carolina said, Trump is insane and Biden is old. And I think that's going to be part of the calculus. And the person did say, being old is the lesser of two evils.
Well, they're both old. So, but that doesn't seem to carry any weight on the Republican side.
No, if a basketball game was 81-77, you think, gosh, that was a close one.
Yeah. Mary, what are you hearing from party leaders and maybe some voters as you cover politics in this region and the government in this region? Is Joe Biden, is Josh Stein, who is the Democratic candidate for governor, of course, are they engendering excitement among Democrats or among independent voters? And the same question about Donald Trump and Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Is anybody talking about these people? Is anybody excited about them?
Yeah. So hearkening back to the idea you just brought up about sort of an enthusiasm gap, you know, the phrase that Anderson Clayton, the chair of the state Democratic Party, used with me was that she's hoping for some reverse coattails this election cycle. The idea that we have a lot of Council of State candidates with ties to the Charlotte area, folks like Jeff Jackson, Braxton Winston, Rachel Hunt. We've also got a very competitive state legislative race in the Charlotte area in Nicole Sidman versus Tricia Cotham. And the idea that, you know, how we will sometimes see if there is a very popular candidate on the presidential ballot, they can sort of drive turnout for down ticket races, sort of maybe see an opposite effect where it's not Joe Biden and it's not Donald Trump driving people to the polls for all the reasons y'all just brought up. Instead, it's these other candidates. And when you get the Democrats that are excited about those candidates to turn out and vote, you hope really, really hard that they go ahead and check that box by Joe Biden's name, too.
We always think of the coattails trickling down from the presidential race on down to other candidates. Does it work in the opposite direction, Susan? And if it does, is that because even though we can no longer go into the voting booth in North Carolina and pull a straight ticket lever, many people still tend to vote that way?
Sure. And I think that we've had both the Trump and Cooper matchup where people split their ticket. Here's one thing I want to get. I think the Democrats' strategy, if you've read some of it, to link Robinson and Trump together, I don't think that's going to be a winning strategy. I think that the down ballot races Anderson Clayton has done this very well. She has made races that are, you know, in all the counties, I think 168 to 170 of the legislative districts now have a candidate. So that might be ground up. What if they have to run aggressive campaigns? What if those are things that, you know, ballot up? I think that's the point of down ballot is very important. And it might not be down ballot, is it may be up ballot. And that's, I think, different in North Carolina. You still can have appeals to some of the local voters. I think that to have that many state elections contested is a very good fact for the Democrats.
Mary, at the risk of asking you to report on what is probably going to be a I don't want to say lie, but a fudging of the truth. What are you hearing from Republican and Democratic Party leaders in terms of their excitement for what's about to transpire between now and November? Are they excited? Are they working like gerbils in a cage to gin up excitement? Or are they telling you that, you know, it's going to be a rough road to hoe?
Yeah, so the outward image so far, at least from Democrats, is one of really trying to generate that enthusiasm. Kamala Harris was in town just a couple of weeks ago to mark the opening of a field office here in Charlotte for the Biden-Harris campaign. It's one of 10 that was launching around the state. Again, a strategy people told me very reminiscent of what Barack Obama tried to do in 2008. A lot of boots on the ground trying to make connections in local communities and generate some energy around the campaign. Reached out to the Trump campaign as well, was told basically, we're not planning on sharing a lot of our strategy with the media. That being said, Trump rallied here ahead of the North Carolina primary. He's rallying in Wilmington later this month, I believe. So certainly not ignoring the state either, but his campaign being a bit more tight-lipped about exactly what their strategy is here in North Carolina.
We have a Republican-controlled legislature and a Republican-controlled Supreme Court here in the state. The legislature draws the voting maps, which appear to many to be highly gerrymandered, to favor Republicans, and a state Supreme Court has upheld those maps. That makes us look red if you color us with your box of 64 Crayolas. We look red, and it may give the GOP candidates an edge in congressional and legislative elections, but for statewide elections. But the presidential election, there are no districts involved. So is this where, whether we're red or blue or purple, Susan, really shows up?
Well, I think it is. And I think that right now I teach gerrymandering in my campaign strategy class, as well as my Congress class, because I think it is strategic. But I think you look at the national vote and you have more people that vote against a candidate that turns people out than vote for a candidate. And I think you'll have, there's not the anger against Joe Biden than there is the anger at Trump, but there's also the enthusiasm for Trump, where there's not that much enthusiasm, at least palpable that we've seen, for Joe Biden. And I think that, but again, bottom up, I think that one of the things, and you mentioned, and Mary mentioned about what Barack Obama did, is use this kind of snowflake model. He not only got local teams, but he looked at empowering local teams.
Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College. She's here along with Mary Ramsey, local government accountability reporter for the Charlotte Observer. When we come back, we'll take a look at some political trends and the impact and the importance of the Electoral College and other things as well. Stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College and Mary Ramsey from the Charlotte Observer. We're talking politics. We're talking presidential election, which is coming up this year. You may have heard that occasionally from time to time. Our presidential contests are not about the popular vote, unfortunately, I think. They're about the 270 electoral votes that a person must get in order to win the presidency, which means you have to have a certain combination of states. Now, we are a relatively big state. We pale in comparison to California, but we're up there with some of the other important ones. Pennsylvania, they have 19 electoral votes. Michigan has, I think, 15. We have 16 electoral votes, Susan. So what role are we likely to play? Have we played? Could we play in this contest?
Well, I think if the Democrats win North Carolina, that's a coup, because these elections, if we've looked at the pattern, even if it's a victory for Trump in 2020, they're at the margins. And I think that makes us more of a must-win state, the Electoral College, and what it symbolizes about the ticket to the South. And should Trump not win North Carolina, that would be maybe a bellwether. But North Carolina, and everybody has pointed this out, is not Georgia. The win in Georgia in 2020 may not be any kind of win and signal any kind of win in North Carolina.
Well, Mary, I read yesterday that national Democrats, at least, are looking more hope at North Carolina than at Georgia. Georgia, they won last time. They lost North Carolina, but the evidently things have flipped. Why?
Well, far be it for me to put words in Dr. Roberts' mouth, for she is much smarter than I. But something I've heard from a lot of folks on her level is that, you know, a lot of people want to compare Mecklenburg to Fulton County, the home of Georgia. Big cities, big Democratic leverage. But you have to look at the counties around the big city. The counties around Atlanta are a lot more blue than the counties around Mecklenburg. And that's why it's traditionally been a little bit easier for Democrats to find statewide success in Georgia. There's just simply more counties in which they can run up the score in the Atlanta metro area than there are in the Charlotte metro area. That being said, as you just suggested, people told me similar things in the reporting of my story, the fact that the Biden campaign is putting so much so early into North Carolina could potentially be indicative of the fact that they're not quite as confident in their ability to find success in Georgia. And they're looking to find other states where they could pick up, as you said, those incredibly valuable electoral votes.
Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton. This is ancient history now, but he defeated Hillary Clinton in 2016 by 3.6 percentage points. He surpassed President Biden in 2020 by only 1.3%, less than 2%. Polls have been saying nationally that Trump is ahead of Biden, or has been ahead of Biden, in this popularity contest, a gap that seems to narrow a little bit, and occasionally Biden will take the lead. If that continues, might that bolster the trend of declining support here for Donald Trump, given the fact that I just said he won against Hillary by more than he won against Biden the first time?
Well, I think that there was a New York Times story just recently that voters or Republicans are starting to feel more nostalgic for the Trump administration. And so if that's the case, I think you might revert back to saying Trump is really a viable candidate, if not the very favored candidate in North Carolina. I think that, Quinnipiac poll said North Carolina was too close to call. I think that's, you know, it doesn't make sense if you look at the issues they identified as being important, the economy, immigration, things like international relation and quote unquote democracy. And yet they had Trump leading Biden in all those and calling it too close to call. I would never call us too close to call.
I misspoke a moment ago. I said that he beat Hillary by more than he beat Biden the first time. He did not beat President Biden the first time. He lost to President Biden. He's trying to do it now, again this time. This is an important year for Democrats nationally, Mary, but also in this state, because the governor's mansion is up for grabs. We have two candidates that both of the candidates at the gubernatorial level, it could be argued, I think, kind of mirror the presidential candidates in their respective parties and in their approach to politics and what they have to say. What are Democrats in this state doing to push the needle in their direction?
Yeah, I think it kind of a quest to figure out exactly what the right issues are, right? As Dr. Roberts was just explaining, you look at sort of the issue by issue polling. You want to find that specific issue. One example, on the anniversary of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Governor Roy Cooper was here in Charlotte on behalf of the Biden-Harris campaign, trying to gin up energy around the issue of reproductive health care access, the threats to that that could come with a change in the governor's mansion here in North Carolina. So trying to find an issue that can maybe drive up some really key demographics for Democrats, both in the gubernatorial race and in the presidential race, with issues like that that have proved fruitful for Democrats in other states.
Let me flip the coin, Mary. What are Republicans doing?
Yeah, so similar to what you mentioned, I think there are some similarities between the Robinson campaign and the Trump campaign. Someone You've got a candidate in Mark Robinson who's certainly not afraid to speak his mind, who certainly had some issues he's had to address, recent reports about his tax filings and things like that. So just similar to chug along, running a lot of similar to the Trump campaign, I think a good number of rallies, really trying to sort of gin up energy within the Republican base, not shying away from having a bit of a loud personality. So again, like you said, I think there's a lot of similarities between how the Trump campaign is approaching North Carolina and the Robinson campaign are approaching the state.
Nationally, Susan, there appear to be three key issues at the moment that are top of mind for voters. They are, in no particular order, abortion, or woman's right to choose, or woman's autonomy over her own, however you want to phrase that, the economy, and immigration. Abortion seems to have people firmly cemented into one of two camps, for or against the overturning of Roe. The economy is an issue the president should own, actually, given the numbers that we have always relied on in any administration to give us a snapshot of the health of the economy. But a lot of voters aren't feeling what should be good effects from the economy. And immigration has been a perennial problem. Democrats and Republicans in Congress came together with Joe Biden to solve the issue for the first time in 20 years. And Donald Trump told Republicans to shoot it down, and they did. So, which of these issues favors which party and which candidate nationally and in North Carolina?
That's a big question. Let me take access to abortion first. And I think that that's one on which I underestimated in 2022 that access to abortion would be up at the top, if not the determinative factor in some states. I think you have abortion access to abortion, contraception activists, and you don't have people that are activists for the economy. And that's where the voter is going to have to make up her or his mind. And I think immigration is one of those that people have impressions about. It doesn't affect North Carolina as directly as many other states, but I think that those three issues are going to be the ones. And again, as you said, no particular order. Again, it's what can get voters to the polls. Voters are still, as everybody listening, as you three know, are evaluating the economy not by other measures, but by their pocketbooks, no matter
Right.
what the other measures are.
Is there a difference that you can discern? I'm not sure which one of you to ask this question of, but is there a difference in these three issues among the people who would vote Republican versus Democrat in terms of the importance? Mary, do you know?
Yeah, so I think it depends on the person, right? I think, when it comes to abortion, I think Democrats are trying to frame it as not just abortion, right? The idea that Republican control at the state or federal level wouldn't just affect access to that procedure, it could also affect access to things like contraception, like treatment for other reproductive system related health issues, and really trying to gin up energy, especially amongst a very specific demographic in women, especially younger women. I think issues like the economy, you've sort of got to play to a bit of a broader audience because it's affecting more people more directly, than something like access to abortion is.
When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the outcry was substantial at the time, and it appeared to instantly become a winning issue, Susan, for Democrats and a losing one for Republicans. In normal times, Republicans might have found a way to moderate those feelings. Instead, they appear to be doubling down in many cases. Arizona will soon begin enforcing an 1864 law that takes abortion restrictions and women's reproductive freedom back to the 19th century. But is this a winning issue for Democrats in North Carolina, or are views here on that issue more conservative? Would they be more in the Arizona camp?
I think they'd be more in the North Carolina camp, which is not Arizona. That's far too draconian. I think that if you look at public opinion about access to abortion, it's on a continuum. It's not on in never case. It's not in all cases. But you can't vote on a continuum. You have to vote yes or no when you look at that question. And I think North Carolina voters might be skeptical of the recent move for 12 weeks, 20 to 12, to Robinson says he would do it to 6 weeks. That might appear to be something that would drive voters. And also assisted reproductive technology. That's one that I think a lot of voters would think in North Carolina and everywhere is a bridge too far, that you're going to do this. And that affects both the Democrats and Republicans. And it means that recent stories about people wanting to have children. And that goes against the kind of line that access to abortion is not wanting to have children. Assisted reproductive technology is wanting to have children.
Mark Robinson, you just mentioned him. So Mary, let's talk about him. Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor in North Carolina running for the top spot earlier in his life, linked abortion to murder and said that he would support a total ban. He has since said he no longer believes that simply passing restrictive abortion laws is the right approach, and he acknowledges that he paid for an abortion for his now wife back in 1989. Senate Leader Phil Berger has said that he does not anticipate any pending moves in the legislature to further restrict abortion access. Do voters, particularly those for whom women's reproductive rights are important, do they believe them, these changes in attitude?
I think that's a question that we might not know the answer to until November, when we see if this is an issue that Democrats will turn out to vote on. I think it's an issue where Democrats have had success since the overturning of Roe, including in traditionally red states. I believe it was Florida a couple of weeks ago announced that they're going to have an abortion-related referendum on their ballot. And you saw Democrats around the country applauding that, at the idea that it could really help them in the state come November in the presidential election. So the hope is that, again, Democrats will be able to energize their base and energize independent voters around this idea that you cannot take Republicans at their word when they say that they're not going to impose further restrictions. But again, until the vote start rolling in, I don't know that you can exactly say definitively whether that argument will work.
Mary, in March, NPR reported that abortion was the driving issue that was pushing North Carolinians to the polls during the primary, but turnout was low, and it was particularly low here in Mecklenburg County. That's normal, actually, for Mecklenburg County elections and for primaries in particular. We were the third lowest had the third lowest number of voters who went to the polls in the primary in the state. Is that normal in general elections too? Do we normally have low turnout in Mecklenburg County, no matter what the issues are, Mary?
The last couple of cycles, yes, this issue came up a lot. For example, when Sherry Beasley lost her Senate race, there were a lot of questions in the wake of that defeat for Democrats around whether Mecklenburg could have done more to help her. Turnout in the county trailed, statewide turnout also trailed Democratic-leaning counties in the Raleigh-Durham area. And you did have some Democratic strategists saying votes for Beasley were left on the table because some people simply didn't turn out. That being said, you also heard, hearkening back to something I said earlier, some other strategists arguing that Mecklenburg's doing everything it can. It's just that, again, those counties surrounding Mecklenburg are simply not as blue. And so when you look at the Charlotte metro area as a whole, you just don't have as deep a blue of a base as you have around some other big cities in other purple states.
So given everything you just said, why is Mecklenburg Democratic Chairman Drew Cromer saying this is the county where the election will be won? And if he really believes that, what do they have to do? What are they doing to make it so.
His argument is that there are, he in the camp, that there were simply votes left on the table, that there are a lot of people in Mecklenburg County that percentage-wise turnout has trailed the state as a whole and other Democratic-leaning counties, and that you simply mathematically, if you get more people to vote in Mecklenburg, you're probably going to have a higher Democratic vote total. And the idea is that, you know, he and the party, as well as the state and national party, are really trying to get out early. That was something I heard from both county and state party leaders during that Biden-Harris field office launch, was that they're getting a lot of energy and resources and help from the Biden-Harris campaign early here in North Carolina that they haven't gotten in past general elections. And it's really kind of hindered their ability to get a sound operation up and running. And again, just trying to have a really strong on the ground operation to really activate the base and try and win over some of those more independent moderate voters.
Susan, we just talked about these three big issues that seem to be at the top of mind to most voters around the country, the abortion, the economy, and immigration. What we have not talked about is one that the Democrats seem to be honing in on, or at least were for a while, and that is that this election will determine the future of democracy in the United States, alluding to the fact that they that Donald Trump has said he wants to be a dictator on day one, and he does have authoritarian leadings, and he sidles up to authoritarian figures around the country, and he does threaten the world order by threatening to withdraw from NATO and not giving arms to Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on forever. Are voters listening? Do they buy into that? Is this top of mind for them? Is this a concern? Is it a motivating factor?
I think, you know, people understand what access to abortion is. People don't really have a handle on what is, quote unquote, democracy on the ballot, because that can
why not? Because they don't vote.
Well, it can appeal to both sides. The election deniers think, yes, democracy is on the ballot. And people, more Democrats, would say, yes, democracy's on the ballot because of election denial and January 6th. So it is an issue that can generate interest on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, and it's how you interpret it. Democracy is on the ballot. I think it's legitimate, but I don't know if everybody sees it the same way.
I have 10 seconds. As a political scientist, how should they view it?
Well, I think you can look at it as something that right now, access to the ballot box. Laura Trump is saying early voting is good for us. Absentee, good for us.
We'll come back and discuss that further. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Susan Roberts is with us. Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College. Mary Ramsey, the local government accountability reporter who also covers politics for the Charlotte Observer, both with us. And we're talking about North Carolina's influence in the upcoming election. I threw you a curve, as I often do to guests, and gave you 10 seconds to answer a very complicated question, Susan. And that is, as a political scientist and somebody who teaches this, what would you tell voters about the threat to democracy? Is it as dramatic as Democrats would have us believe? That's number one. Number two, if we were to transition, because some people think we need a strong man at the top, given what they perceive to be the current situation in America. If we were to transition into that, we have been told by some that this would completely change life in America as we have always known it. Is that how it
is? Yeah, here's my answer very quickly. If democracy is on the ballot, which I think it is, you just have to point to trust in institutions and trust in the presidency. And that has plummeted. And that's why I would say democracy on the ballot is very important, because it really has an impact on trust in our institutions.
And a final question about reproductive rights. Is there any way to tell how North Carolina voters feel about President Biden's promise that if you reelect him and you give him a Democratic Congress, he will make Roe v. Wade the law of the land?
Well, I don't know how you can test drive that in North Carolina, but I think he has a point that a majority in both the House and the Senate is really the key to getting something like that passed. And that would, legislatively, codify Roe, you're not going to get another decision from the Supreme Court that would make Roe versus Wade the law of the land.
So, Mary, the president and the vice president have been in North Carolina a lot of late, including Charlotte, to tout their achievements on jobs, their achievements on the economic front. The president has presided over a period of undeniable high employment, low unemployment, and he's had some success in lowering the cost of some drugs and putting people to work on infrastructure projects, either now and in the future. Are North Carolinians experiencing the benefits of any of that to any measurable, meaningful degree? Because one of this administration's problems seems to be the president is not getting credit for any of this.
I think it depends on which campaign you ask. I think if you were to ask the Biden campaign, they would certainly point to things like lower prescription drug prices to getting a lid on the inflation issues that we saw post-COVID pandemic. But I think if you were to talk to the Trump campaign, they would tell you that the average North Carolinian is still struggling with higher prices on everyday goods, such as groceries, in the wake of inflation post-COVID. I think they would tell you that, again, similar to what you just said, the quote-unquote average North Carolinian is not seeing the benefits of the gains the Biden-Harris administration has made in the economy. So you've really got, and especially in, you know, today's day and age when people are very much, you know, in an information vacuum to an extent, I think getting the information that they want to hear from the political side that they agree with, I think if you were to talk to a voter on the street, their answer, if you were to ask them, are you better off economically than you were 4 years ago, might have a lot to do with their party affiliation, their political beliefs, rather than simply sitting down and looking at data from, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics or another state agency that tracks the actual raw data on these kinds of things.
Susan.
Well, you mentioned the visits of Biden-Harris to North Carolina. I think there'll be more, and they got a freebie out of the Biden-Harris visit because it was, you know, rare that a president and vice president appear. But not just look at how often they come, but look at where they're coming. Raleigh, Durham, Charlotte, they're not going to Eastern North Carolina. They're not going to Asheville. And I think that's a question of let's turn out. Let's not worry about persuading. Let's just worry about mobilizing. And that's something I'd like to see where the next visits are.
Well, what about clearly, the people have bifurcated. They're in one camp or the other, except for the great unwashed in the middle, the independent voters who do. I think they probably will make the decision. They'll be the deciders in this election. So they've given up on trying to persuade them?
Well, I think they haven't given up, but I think they know, you know, many people think an independent is the thinking voter, the sophisticated voter. And there really is in that middle of independents, we say unaffiliated, voters who just aren't motivated to vote in general. So I don't think you can tailor your message towards unaffiliated voters. You've got to turn them out, but you also have to maybe say things that would appeal. As you point out, the democracy on the ballot can appeal to the unaffiliated voter. If you look at things like fairness, can appeal to the unaffiliated voter. But just focusing on the issues and, you know, if I may say, diluting your issue as a Democrat or a Republican won't necessarily capture your base. And all you need is the people that turn out for you. You need some of the unaffiliated, especially in North Carolina. They're a little over a third of the electorate, and it's growing. Yes, we have the demographics that are helping favor the Democrats, but you also have demographics of people moving to the state that declare unaffiliated. And so you do have to do something for the unaffiliated, but you should not, if I were a consultant, say, tailor your message to the unaffiliated.
Inflation seems to be the biggest bugaboo here. People are working, but they may be working in the gig economy, and every dollar counts in that economy. But inflation has really been rampant, and a lot of that is due to the supply chain disruptions and economic conditions created by the COVID-19 pandemic and the steps taken to keep the economy afloat during that period, for which we are still paying the price because they essentially flooded the economy with government money and tax dollars. Presidents get blamed when the economy is bad, when inflation is high. Should President Biden be blamed for this? Is he being blamed either for causing it or for not being able to rein it in? Susan.
I think that it's a question of perception. People might not look at the record, as we've said, of accomplishments. They may be simply saying the kitchen table of, and again, the grocery prices. I've been in the grocery line and people say, I can't believe how much this is costing. And I think that's going to be the determining factor, not unemployment, not job creation, not some things about the statistics from the Fed. And I don't know that you can change that. I don't know that Biden can turn that around.
Democrats, Mary, want to keep the governor's mansion. They want to keep the White House. With some effort, North Carolina could play a role in that, no question about it. But they would also like to regain control of the House and maintain control of the Senate. Neither of our senators are in play, so we will play no role in that. But we could play a role, I suppose, if you keep all your appendages crossed, if you're a Democrat, you could play a role in flipping the House. Will we play that role, or is that just a pipe dream, too?
I think the message I've heard from a lot of national Democrats is that they're not as concerned with our congressional races this election cycle as they are our state legislature. The branch of the National Democratic Party that handles state legislature races has told me they've really pinpointed North Carolina as a state. They don't necessarily think they can flip this election cycle, but they think they could make significant gains to break the Republican supermajority in Raleigh and help set up Democrats to potentially flip the state house in a future election cycle.
Is one of the key races in that effort here in Mecklenburg County in the Tricia Cotham race?
Absolutely. So the National Democratic Party has pinpointed Nicole Sidman as one of their spotlight candidates. That means she will be getting a lot of help from the National Party when it comes to both strategizing and fundraising. She's one of, I believe, about 10 candidates in the state that got that distinction. Again, the idea being from Democrats that they want to pinpoint a handful of really what they see as winnable races that could help break that Republican supermajority in Raleigh and in theory, then keep the governor's mansion and have some sort of Democratic power base in Raleigh.
Republicans.
And that race was high profile. It was a national. It was covered nationally. Many, I'd say, 60% of North Carolinians know about that flipping. And I think it that fact alone, even if you were not in the district, is something that people have to contemplate.
Republicans have put up a very controversial candidate for the governor's office in this race. They put up another very controversial candidate running for the superintendent of public instruction. Actually, Catherine Truitt, the Republican incumbent, was defeated by Michelle Morrow in the primary, and Michelle Morrow is the controversial candidate. Voters made that decision, I suppose it could be argued. In the attorney general's race, one of the more conservative members of Congress, a member of the Freedom Caucus, Republican Dan Bishop, is running against moderate Democrat Jeff Jackson. And in the race for the White House, you got Donald Trump in the middle of a criminal trial, facing several other criminal trials, unless the Supreme Court says he's immune from prosecution. How might the presidents of these candidates influence voters in North Carolina, Susan?
Well, I think that you've got very controversial candidates, but I think if you look at it, the trials of Donald Trump are not having an impact on the general voter. And the rhetoric of
that's because they're not taking place, except for one in New York.
I think also, though, the rhetoric of Morrow and Robinson, more so than Bishop, but he's still taking aggressive rhetoric. I think those are ones that voters are overlooking. Republicans are overlooking because of Trump. For Donald Trump to say that Mark Robinson is Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids is overreach at best. And I think that the voters, Republicans in North Carolina, I think will overlook some of that. I think if that has an impact, it will be in turning out Democrats and turning out the independent voters.
Well, once again, these are not district races. These governor's race is a statewide race. And the same thing is true, I guess, for the attorney general and for the superintendent of education. So will this be another place where you can tell whether we're really red or really blue?
Well, one of the determining factors, say in the South, was when Republicans started winning sheriff's races, then you knew it was a two-party South. And I think that that has something to do with this might be an indicator of how Republicans in North Carolina understand their partisanship and what it entails and how deep it goes. And I think it is something, as you point out, that can signal a solid ticket. As you began with straight ticket voting, I'm not sure that there'll be ticket splitting. Analysts are saying there'll be ticket splitting because voters will say, Robinson is just too extreme, and they may vote Trump and then Stein. I don't know that I'd take that bet.
The Biden campaign, Mary, was helped 4 years ago by young voters. They are courting those voters again, particularly those voters under 30. But some polls nationally indicate that Donald Trump is capturing those voters. What's happening? Do you know what's happening in North Carolina?
So I think there are certain issues where the Biden-Harris campaign is hoping that they can get a lot of younger voters to turn out and really energize that base. We've talked about reproductive access. I think they have tried very hard. Obviously, their full student loan debt cancellation plan did not go through, but anytime they've been able to make any incremental progress on that, you see them trying to make a really big show of that, again, trying to energize the youth vote. I think one issue that I'm curious to see if there is an impact that actually shows up in November, but it seems to me, on social media and just talking to people that could potentially be hurting Biden with younger voters, is the conflict in Israel and in Palestine. The idea that there are a lot of younger voters who feel very passionately that the Biden administration is not doing enough to address human rights issues in Gaza, that they should be taking a harder tone and a firmer stance with Israel, cutting off some of the support that the U.S. has traditionally provided to Israel financially and militarily. I think that's an issue that seems to me, at least, to be very important to the base, especially to younger voters. So I'm very curious to see if that does make a difference in terms of suppressing the youth turnout for Biden, or if that's more of just sort of the mirage that social media can create when you've got a very loud but sometimes small group.
I agree completely.
And Susan, it's also been reported that Black voters have cooled on Biden, and increasing numbers of Hispanic voters are turning toward Republicans and to Donald Trump. How serious is that to Biden's chance of success, particularly here in North Carolina? Is that happening here in North Carolina?
Well, I don't know about North Carolina in particular, but I think that some of the calculus among Black voters is, what have you done for me lately? Don't just try to galvanize the Black vote. And this was a philosophy in Atlanta or Georgia. Empower Black voters year round. Don't just say, I want you to turn out on election day. And I think that there have been trends in other states that they're making appeals to Black voters. And they're really Hispanic Latino voters are looking more towards the Republicans, giving them a serious look. And those numbers are increasing in North Carolina. And I think that, you can't, identity politics, like it or not, is still a factor in politics today.
So to help make this state in play, Democrats have got to really put their pedal to the metal here in North Carolina at all these different levels. Mary, the Biden campaign has opening 10 field offices. Where are they? How do they function? How important are they really to success or failure?
Yeah, so one of those field offices, the one that's opening, was marked by a visit from Vice President Kamala Harris, was right here in Uptown Charlotte, very close to the WFAE offices, I believe, and also in some other parts of the state. The idea being, again, hearkening back to that Obama 08 campaign, that having boots on the ground is a really good strategy for Democrats in terms of energizing the base and persuading independents. That being said, I think campaigning is very different in 2024 than it was in 2008. So again, kind of remains to be seen whether this can make a difference. But Democrats, especially at the state party level and the local party level, are really taking those offices as a sign of the Biden campaign's early investment, something that hasn't been there in previous cycles in the state.
Very quickly, are the Republicans and the Trump campaign doing anything similar? 10 seconds.
I asked and they did not give me a specific answer.
Okay. I was going to ask you to close with any predictions you may have for November, but I'm going to let you off the hook for that. Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College, Mary Ramsey, local government accountability reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Thank you both for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.